X in temperature for the meeting for today. And then what? So on.
Apologies for the late start. We changed the venue. Welcome to everybody here. The agenda today is basically five members registration for those one by Mr. Salt and Mr. Becker. Are there any apologies before we start?
Yeah, we've got an apology from Ms. Mark and Ms. Kaike.
Maybe for the benefit of the meeting, maybe if our guests can maybe introduce themselves.
Thank you, Chair. My name is James Shaw.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. My name is Lorette Lowe. I'm from the Department of Justice.
My name is Bert van der Valk. I'm with the Department of Safety and Security, SAPS.
It is common knowledge that copper theft and particularly cable theft, the scourge around that is absolutely destroying the economy of this country. The current position on cable theft in South Africa, I just want to highlight a few aspects. Business Against Crime has reported that the theft of copper cables cost the South African economy an estimated 5 billion rand per year. 5 billion sounds a round figure, but if we consider that, that means actually it's 5,000 million rand. And this has also been proven with statistics. Statistics have shown that from 2005 to 2006, there was a 70% increase in the reporting of these incidents by crime, by Telkom, Eskom and Transnet Freight Rail. I've put a number of questions, parliamentary questions, to the ministers, and the executive has informed me that Eskom suffered losses of 25.2 million as a result of almost 1,600 incidents of cable theft during 2007. But if we're talking about Spoornet, for instance, recently we had copper theft, cable theft, on the just outside Pretoria, towards the Pretoria station. That was a massive setback. But as a result, people went on the loot and they started burning carriages. And that destroyed more than one total train set. This amount to millions of rand. So there are other aspects as well. Similarly, at Tembisa, the entire rail transport from Pretoria to Johannesburg came to a standstill, again resulting in burning of carriages. Because the people are absolutely so desperate in terms of their means. And now we're talking about the poorest of the poor. they are actually the worst being affected by this scourge that is happening here. And needless to say, during this week, you might have seen photographs even, talking about, I think they call them the Ngyokas, people going underneath, cutting these cables, and of a specific person that has been burned alive. Totally burnt out. That is also the effect. Now, one may say, serves him right. But I don't think we can ever say that. Why did this person do it? They are but the small instruments in the hands of larger players. And we've got to get to the larger players. And this is simply what this proposal of mine is about. In answers to the parliamentary questions, it was further stated that Telkom suffered a direct loss of 203 million and estimated revenue loss of 368 million. But if Telkom is suffering this, imagine what is happening to business which are being affected by those lines that are completely out of operation. What is being done about to curb cable theft? It's virtually the hands of our police, our investigators, our industries are cut off. But we are very grateful for police services, and particularly by sponsoring the second-hand goods wall. This was a tremendous positive move in the right direction to look at this particular aspect, because although it's got a much wider context than cable theft, some of the basis of cable theft can be brought in under this particular aspect. Now, in conclusion, this is before, now I've got a full summary, and there is a full motivation that is in front of you. If there are questions, I'm going to speak on to this. The reason why we are looking at this particular form of legislation is that a few people would realize that, call it in simple terms, sabotage legislation is most definitely appropriate in this particular case. It's the destruction of infrastructure. Now, if it was telephone cables, it would have been included in terms of the existing law. But electrical cables have not been included in terms of that. So, with a small amendment, we can extend it that electrical cables will also be then included in this. And then, another aspect that is of interest in terms of the sabotage bill, it's being asked of the political motivation, some aspect in terms of to what was your thinking behind it. We said, if you are trying to enrich, simply enrichment, by destructing infrastructure, to me, is the same thing as sabotage. And in terms of this, with small amendments to the existing bill, act, we can in fact bring this onto this level. Obviously then very harsh sentences will be applicable to it. But in terms of the sabotage bill, the existing one, I call it this, this is now the constitutional democracy against terrorism and related activities. So for easy reference, I'm just going to call it the sabotage bill. In terms of this, any person who is related or are involved, directly or indirectly, can also be apprehended. Now think about the scrap dealers. The scrap dealers, to my mind, are to a vast extent the origin of what is happening. There is a market that is being created, and if you can stop that particular market, then we are halfway there. I think at this stage I would be open for any questions that could come forward, and then we can continue perhaps with this.
Okay. Are there any questions before we go to Mr. Van Hock? Or should we get both presentations?
I think we should see one.
I just quoted. And they ran across and actually threw the cable off of my house. And the whole area was plunged in darkness. Then I phoned the department. I phoned the police and they said, by then, the cable test is becoming a normal thing. And I think there is a cynic, because one road cable is cut. Following that is the cut. Either it's hijacking of cars, breaking into people's homes, etc. So, Chesterfield, I think there is quite a substance, and we should actually look at these talks. We should start taking sicker measures and let us see in respect what is happening. Also, I think Rebecca was right to say there is a market, and that is why it's going so And I think that we must also start putting our finger on the top of the market that has been created to actually get these things, buy these things from the various people. I just want to give support. Very, very carefully, the people who see what we can do to bring the benefits of that. Thank you, Chair.
Sophie?
Thank you, Chair.
Thank
I think this is a national problem. Last week, as I was coming up to Cape Town, now, there's a shock at the farm. Our town is a small dog surrounded by farms. Now I found their farmer chasing a bike that was pulling a trailer, and it was, they are busy buying this iron and metal from people, and now some workers are even stealing out from their own workplace. To get money from these people just to sell this thing. And they were also complaining that they are still being offered from there, from Telkom and all of those things. I think it's a very good question.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else before we go to Mr. Kamal? Mr. Kamal?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, all the members that South African Police Service position on the proposed bill is, I think, generally in line also with that of the Department of Justice, which is the reason why I will kick off our comments on it. The issue that I think is important to bear in mind from our perspective is that any prosecution under the current legislation or the legislation that will be amended, the Protection of Constitutional Democracy Against Terrorist and Related Activities Act of 2004, is dependent on the definition of terrorist activity. Now, in terms of the definition, there's a three-tiered structure that is visible from Section 1. That is to be proposed to be amended. Firstly, the nature of the conduct, in other words, the activity itself is a factor. Then secondly, intention is required in terms of that structure. And then lastly, and importantly, I think for this specific discussion, is the fact that there must be a specified motive that is required in terms of the section. The clause in the amendment bill seeks to insert the word a system used for the delivery of essential electricity services, but if read in its context, the staff is of the opinion that the definition already extends to electricity services, as paragraph 6 merely lists some of the examples, and the reference to infrastructure would include electricity. But more importantly, the this part of the definition in Clause 1A, or the Section 1A with a proposed amendment, is that this portion of the definition relates to the intention of a terrorist activity. Secondly, Clause 1B2 inserts the following, or in the case of activities referred to in paragraph A, 6 to 7, result in financial losses. They are of the opinion that this also refers to the pure motive, the pure intention, I apologize, the pure intention requirement of the section, and the insertion therefore does not contribute to that specific paragraph in the structure of the definition. Then lastly, clause 1C, where it is inserted, or in the case of the activities referred to in paragraph A, 6 to 7, purely for financial gain. Once again, the SAPS is of the opinion that paragraph C refers to the motive behind the terrorist activities, and that the insertion does not contribute to the structure of the definition. The issue of cable theft is, as the Honourable Member stated, the underlying motivation for the introduction of the legislation. The police at the moment, through our Minister, the second-hand goods bill, was introduced in Parliament. It was passed in the National Assembly. It's presently before the National Council of Provinces, and it provides inter alia for the control of cable theft and the activities related to that. The penalties have been increased substantially. The present legislation, Act 23 of 1955, provides for a maximum penalty of 12 months or R1,000. And we agree with the Honourable Member that the present legislation really does not assist in curbing the problems associated with cable theft. In the new bill, however, as I said, the penalties have been increased, and a maximum prison sentence of 10 years imprisonment is possible under the bill. Secondly, the prosecution of offenders under the second-hand goods bill has the added advantage that motive does not come into play. Motive, therefore, does not have to be proved, as would be the case with prosecution in connection with a terrorist activity. This motive places a very, very heavy burden on the prosecution, as it is not only the intention requirement, but the actual motive behind that to damage the state, so to speak. Also, in terms of the present legal situation, theft and malicious injury to property are mostly used to prosecute these offences, but what is often forgotten in the process of prosecuting these offenders is that the common law offences may be prosecuted in the High Court or referred to the High Court for sentence. With this as a backdrop, I can possibly inform this committee that the South African Police Service, together with a lot of the other agencies like Telkom, Squarnet, Eskom, etc., are in the process of establishing teams to concentrate on cable theft, copper theft, all non-ferrous metal theft, with training for the investigators to make them aware of the various pieces of legislation and the common law, but also to assist prosecutors with prosecuting these offences to the fullest of their capacity. In other words, where necessary, that those offences may be referred to the High Court for sentence, and as we all know, the sentence that can be imposed by the High Court is of course also a life sentence. In conclusion, Chairman, Honourable Members, the police believe that the adoption of the draft bill could boil down to a reenactment of the offence of sabotage. The South African Law Commission specifically recommended that the offence of sabotage should be removed from our law books. I can refer you to paragraph 13.193 of the South African Law Commission report, Project 105 of August 2002, and that recommendation is on page 643. Is there anybody that wants me to repeat that reference? Secondly, also, Chairman, Honourable Members, the Rapporteur of the United Nations, my commission, and also within the context of the United Nations Counterterrorism Executive Committee, or UNCTAD as well known, to South Africa, it was made quite clear that the United Nations wish to limit prosecutions under the so-called terrorism legislation, simply to avoid watering down this type of offense, so that when there is an actual prosecution, that it be deemed very serious. And this is also apparent from the long title of the Protection of Constitutional Democracy Against Terrorism and Related Activities Act, and also apparent from the preamble to that act. Thank you, Chair.
Any comments on the presentation from the Second Hand Beat Act, the one from 1935, right?
Yes.
The other one is about 1950. It says that if you deal, if the Second Hand Beat of violence says that the last couple of years, you've got to keep it to 7 days.
That's good.
What are the current problems with violence?
The present legislation still makes provision for the 7 days requirement, and it has more stringent, puts more stringent requirements also on the dealers. Chairman, with your permission, I can give a very brief background to the summary of the second-hand goods bill that is presently before the NCOP.
And we're all very worried about one thing. But even metal, they are stealing now, they stole my one side of my fence.
Yeah.
It's not copper and brass anymore. They take it to one dealer and when I've got documents, whatever, it's just to be seen out as the attitude that I get from the battery buying. So my personal opinion, whatever, I don't even think
Chairman, with respect, we are not only revising the legislation, but also the approach to the policing or law enforcement with regards to the second-hand goods. The present legislation, the 55 Act, in terms of that legislation, scrap metal dealers who sell ferrous metals, steel, iron, etc., are excluded from the operation of the Act. They therefore do not need a certificate from the police, and they can operate without keeping registered presently. The new Act, all scrap metal dealers will also fall under the Act. They will have to keep their records. But furthermore, there is an obligation in the new bill, there is an obligation on dealers to make certain that the property that they buy is not stolen. There are certain tests that they can apply, but if a person, for instance, if I may give an example, goes to a second-hand dealer with 50 bronze taps or 10 manhole covers, that should raise a suspicion, and it places a very high premise on the ethical behavior of the dealers. If they do not comply, they are going to get serious prison sentences. Secondly, also, the bill makes provision for the extension of the policing powers to other agencies. For instance, municipal police, Eskom, Telkom, Skoonet, so that the eyes and ears of the police, so to speak, and also the prosecution of these offenders will be possible on a much wider front than is presently the situation. So also with the import and export of metals, which is also a problem, the International Trade Administration Commission inspectors theoretically can also get the policing powers that is presently in the bill. So we feel that the the war on these criminals will be able, we will be able to conduct that on a much wider front and with much more tools to our disposal than is presently the situation. Legislative-wise, police-wise, justice-wise, to curtail the scourge. I haven't heard anything. What is being done? I can say, without a doubt, that the police services, the general setup, has failed the people of South Africa. The increase in a matter of 2 years of the same type of criminal activity, which has increased by 70%, whether it has rung alarm bells or not, I don't know whether it's been accepted by the various departments or whether they are just paging the matter over. The second-hand goods bill, I think in no doubt, is a move in the right direction. But it is a single move. It is not a solution at all. The only valid argument that Mr. van der Walt gave in terms of the legislation, why it should perhaps not be adopted, is the fact that in terms of the Law Commission, that the entire legislation as it is in front of us, the protection of constitutional democracy against terrorism and related activities, that is to be scrapped. This is how I understood you to say that was the that sabotage action should be removed from the statute.
If I can just clarify, Chairman, honourable members, the Law Commission report was with regards to the terrorism vote, or the so-called terrorism vote, and it referred to the crime or offence of sabotage under the Internal Security Act. And the recommendation was that sabotage must form part of the terrorism legislation.
In other words, that section, the sabotage aspect, that's the recommendation, is to be scrapped or to be removed.
From our law and not appear in the terrorism.
Yeah. Now, if that is being done, surely alternative type of legislation must be prepared before that can be scrapped. Now, that can be 1 year, it can be 2 years, it can be 20 years. In terms of before the actual action can be taken. My question is, what are we doing in the interim? This proposal that I've got here is with the existing bill, with the existing legislation. It can be incorporated, it can toughen it up, and if you want to then scrap the whole aspect of the sabotage aspect of it. In due time, you can always scrap it then, but by then you would have alternative legislation in its place. And this is my concern in terms of this particular aspect. This is this proposal can, before the end of this year, give tooth, can get available for in this legislation, and something can be done. And it can send a very, very clear message to dealers in this scrap metal, in this type of thing.
Thank you.
Can I just clarify something? That recommendation from the Law Commission was before the current terrorism goal.
actually the recommendation from it. Instead of conspiracy being dealt with under the common law, if I'm not mistaken, so you're being charged under the common law at the moment. So it's never formed part of the Terrorism Act. So it's not a matter of taking it out. It's never been in there. And so the proposal, I think, from SAPT at the moment, which Justice and Offence, and this is not our legislation, but when the Terrorism Act was passed, I mean, the committee sat jointly. So our understanding would just be that we think that it's better to deal with it in the second-hand goods bill, and if you think that that should be strengthened with regard to sentencing, maybe, that you want to send out a strong message as Parliament, then you can still amend it in the NCOP to try and make the sentencing stronger. I would suggest that's maybe a possibility of making it a minimum sentence if you want to send out a clear message on, because I think principles seem to be covered in the second-hand goods bill, but that would just be our position.
Okay, I think what we should do is, we're going to have a discussion with the committee on the government team, taking each one of the
are we just letting them get away, or how are we monitoring them? Because out there is a big market, and unless we don't control that and don't place restrictions, so is it coming to the main level that has been explained that I think if you look at the paper, there's a life now, a child's life. Can't tell you the name home because there's no car. And I think first thing we should deal with this gene, this crisis of gene, facing very serious issues and buying things that we pay and truly have. Because if you have no use running for the head or the tail, so what we should do is actually, one thing that the matter is that we have to look at and see what the situation is and how, what can we do to stop this thing.
Thank you. Well, I think we
want to propose whatever we can to improve the situation. Because I spoke to someone on Tuesday night, a farmer, railway line runs through the farm, and they're not only feeding the cables, they're feeding the springs. The springs are made of metal, so it's going to be very short from now. You're going to see trains derailed, so the springs are actually moving together. Nothing to do with the farm. Okay, can we move on now to the farm? Thank you very much, Mr. President.
Yes, thank you, Chair, and thanks very much for the opportunity to present this bill. Thank you, too, for accommodating my schedule. I was due to be here on Friday but wasn't able to be here, so my apologies to members of the committee. Let me explain the origins of this proposal. I was approached in the course of last year by two separate constituents of mine, both of whom had criminal convictions. And the one had a criminal conviction emanating from a 1975 conviction under the Immorality Act, in the sense that he had had sexual relationships with a white woman and was convicted in the Wynberg Regional Court for that offence. But the second gentleman approached me because he was applying for a job, and he needed to specify whether he had a criminal conviction. And he went on to this database that you find out whether you have a criminal conviction, and lo and behold, he had been convicted in the Umtata Magistrates Court of transgressing the curfew regulations during the military dictatorship in Transkei. And both of these offences had resulted in criminal convictions, and as a result of that, the one person was not able to go and visit his son who's emigrated to the United States because the United States has a prohibition on people travelling with criminal convictions, and the other person had to explain during the job interview why he had a criminal conviction and what the nature of it was and so on. Now, that obviously created huge problems for these people. So I interceded on behalf of both of them with the Department of Justice, and I was informed that there's no way, other than applying for a presidential pardon, that a criminal conviction of this sort can currently be expunged from their record. Now, as you would know, applying for a presidential pardon is a cumbersome process. You have to fill out a big form. It has to go to the Department of Justice. It gets assessed there, then goes through to the presidency. It's a very long and complicated procedure. But over and above that, it's in respect of these particular acts and these offences, it's humiliating and wrong for those people to have to go through that procedure in respect of an offence that should never have been an offence in the first place. So, that prompted this particular bill. And what does the bill seek to do? In the first instance, it seeks to expunge all the records of offences that would not have been offences in an open and democratic society based on human dignity, equality, and freedom. That is the formulation contained in Section 39(1)(a) of the Bill of Rights in our Constitution. It says anything that falls foul of that definition is automatically not an offence, and you can then expunge the records of those offences. Now, this is obviously easier said than done, because I then sat down and I tried to enumerate in the form of a type of schedule all the offences that would be covered by this definition of not having been an offence in an open and democratic society based on human dignity, equality, and freedom. Because there are literally thousands of acts, laws, ordinances, regulations, decrees, bylaws, and so on at all different levels of government, by the old South African Parliament and by its government in the form of executive decrees, by the old TBVC Parliaments and their governments in the form of decrees, by provincial councils, by divisional councils, by city councils, by administrative actions, and so on. So when I got sort of through about four pages of laws, I actually decided that I wasn't sure whether all had been included. And let me give you an example. For example, the enforcement of beach apartheid in the Cape Peninsula was not enforced by the Separate Immunities Act per se, but by an ordinance passed by the Cape Divisional Council. So if you enumerate the Separate Immunities Act and not the ordinance passed by the Cape Divisional Council, it's possible that some of these offences may slip through the cracks. Also, it's not also always possible to link the offences directly to apartheid legislation. Let me give you another example. There were people whose citizenship was removed by virtue of the status of the Transkei Act. They lost the status of being South African citizens. For that reason, they were not able to have South African passports. And so those people left the country typically illegally over the borders and thus found themselves guilty of an offence under the Immigration Act. Now, the Immigration Act isn't an apartheid legislation per se, an old order legislation, but the effect was caused by an apartheid legislation. So, how do you get around that? What this bill of mine seeks to do is to create a very simple administrative act. If you fall into one of these categories, all you do is you apply in the prescribed way to the Department of Justice to have that record expunged. If it turns out, and the people who are working on that group set up by the President will tell you that sometimes these laws are linked with other laws. If it becomes more complicated, then and the person in the Department of Justice is not able to make a decision based purely on the fact. What the bill then does is create a criminal records board chaired by a judge to hear any appeals against the decision made on an administrative level. And that that particular criminal records board is chaired by a judge, but it has representatives of all the relevant departments upon it. Clause 4 of this bill deals with administrative and procedural matters. Such is the bill that I have proposed. Now, subsequent to its introduction to this committee, which was in about September of last year, the Ministry of Justice and Constitutional Development has introduced a somewhat similar measure in the form of the Criminal Procedure Amendment Bill, Bill 42 of 2008. And Clause 3 of this bill seeks to expunge certain convictions under what they describe as old order legislation. Now, I am delighted that this bill has been introduced, but I do fear that in some respects it doesn't go quite far enough. The new or proposed Section 271B1 of that particular bill specifies a list of laws, and those laws include the Black Land Act, the Bantu Land and Trust Act, the Bantu Urban Areas Consolidation Act, the Coloured Person Settlement Act, and so on and so forth. And if a person has been convicted in terms of these laws, the record is automatically expunged from the record. In terms of the contemplated 271B2 of this bill, that creates the opportunity for persons to apply in respect of other legislation not specified in the first subsection for expungement of the record, but limits this to, and I quote from the bill, any old order legislation other than those referred to in subsection 1, which was enacted either in the Republic or in any homeland, which creates offences that were based on race, which created offences with a view to promoting the policy of apartheid, which would not have been considered to be offences in an open and democratic society based on human dignity, equality, and freedom. As I've said, there's a huge similarity, but I have two major concerns. The first concern is that this bill, as introduced into the Parliament by the Minister of Justice and Constitutional Development, may not be processed at all, or may be processed in a form that does not meet the objectives of the bill that I am actually proposing. The second concern that I have, and I specified this during my introduction to my bill, is that this bill introduced into Parliament may not cover all the offences enacted by subordinate legislatures such as city councils, divisional councils, and so on, nor is it clear whether the TBVC states are included within the ambit of what the bill describes as homelands, nor does it seem to me to cover the unintended consequences, such as I explained in the offence of leaving the Republic illegally, because that isn't actually covered in terms of old order legislation. Now, I intend, through my colleagues in the Portfolio Committee on Justice and Constitutional Development, to engage with the committee on this particular bit of legislation to ensure that these concerns that I have are properly taken into account in when the bill is passed. And if it is passed, and if it is passed in a satisfactory form that caters for all those eventualities, then I, for one, would be delighted to withdraw this particular provision. But until that stage is reached, my appeal is the bill remains on the agenda of your committee, and that we just keep it there until such time as we know that all the concerns that I have raised have in fact adequately been dealt with. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Scott. Are there any questions? Okay, can I then
thank you, Chair.
Yes.
Now, Mr. Kelp actually covered me completely because I was standing thank you to explain what the current bill and urged him to make submissions to the Portfolio Committee through his representatives there. And the only thing I can comment on maybe is just that Mr. Kelp questioned whether the bill will be processed at all. As to my latest information, which was said yesterday outside the committee, that the Committee of Justice and this committee can just interact. I mean, that's not even my position to say, but the chairperson did mention they will proceed on this bill in September this year, and they're trying to process it definitely within this term. So it will be going ahead, but that's the only input I can give them.
Do you think you're the part of the board that wrote it?
I cannot comment on that.
Are there any other comments or questions?
Chair, whether the envisaged bill, which is comes from the staff, the one that comes from the department, will entail this. I think it is very important that action be taken, that these people, that their criminal records must be expunged. Whether it's been done through the staff proposal or through the bill that is also coming forward from the department, it's not important to me from which way. It must be done. And if we could have the assurance that that particular goal from the department would incorporate these aspects of some proposal, I think then in such a case, it could be a very constructive move. This could be a way forward.
One must take the mindset as to how do we handle this expulsion of the criminal records and pardoning of the criminal crimes. Are we actually considering the victim's family when they say, what are we saying? Are we prepared to hear the findings from the government? There is a lot in this system, if one has a system here. What was the crime committed in the apartheid crime in the apartheid war? And what caused the person to commit the crime now that he's in front of the apartheid crime until now that we in democracy is still behind God? And now we are asking for the president to find a way to expunge the criminal activity that has been done. Seriously thinking, I think we should involve, before passing any law, involve the victim's family, the father even, against that person that we want to actually pass. So I think it's a matter that it cannot be done in a few meetings. Just in overnight. There are lots of things that we have to look at. Because out there in the public eye, we must look fair, you know, much as fair as possible, what the committee is saying about the public is saying in the space.
Are there any other comments?
I would just like to remind again, all seniors, that our beloved Madiba is being looked upon as a criminal, as a terrorist, until this particular year in America, and that it was only in this year that the Senate and the House representatives passed a bill or a proposal that his name be, you could say, honored, and that his name be kept in terms of it. And I think if that is applicable in America, so much more in South Africa, in our own case, when we look at these particular areas.
Does anybody know the number of people that are talking about?
I tried to find out. You know, it involves the search of, you know, a number of databases of court records that you know, not in the entirety, but also in the former TVs, in the country, in the homeland, you know, all over the place. Somebody said to me that
there are probably hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people.
Yes, sir. Okay.
Answer the questions in our country. We need to check out, we cannot be in the house. No Dorothy, eh? There's no Dorothy, the Dorothy's the charcoal. Thanks, Gary. I would appreciate that. And then I'll let you have this one and you let me have that one. Thank you for your help.